Welcome back to Your Political Playlist. I'm your host, Emily Tisch Sussman. A lot has happened over the past 100 days, but most importantly, President Biden made it through the first 100 days. He accomplished his goal of administering 200 million vaccine doses, all while passing the COVID relief stimulus and proposing a historic and massive infrastructure plan. So, how has the president done during his first 100 days? And how will his actions affect the economy in the future? To get us up to speed on all things budget and economy, I'm sitting down with economic expert Tamara Fusile. She has spent years at the heart of D.C. politics, working on a broad range of policy issues, including federal budget and appropriations, nutrition programs, and housing issues. She also managed passing the federal budget through Congress for the Obama administration. With that, I'm excited to welcome Tamara.
There you are. Tamara, so good to see you.
Hey, Emily. Thanks for having me.
It's so great to have you on today. You are the perfect expert to be chatting with us. If our tagline of the show is that we are chatting with women at the seat of power and influence, you are that. You are going to break it all down for us. So we're really excited to have you on. So the big first question framing for all of this, you know, we're just around Biden's 100 days. He's got his big legislative priorities, the COVID relief package passed, introducing infrastructure one, possibly infrastructure two. How do you think he's doing in terms of an economic plan in the first 100 days?
Well, I think that's a great question, Emily. I mean, I think really when Biden came in as president, he said, addressing the pandemic, getting our economy back on track is going to be job number one. And what we've seen in these first 100 days is that he's absolutely committed to taking the steps to get that done. Passing the rescue plan was an enormous task that he had to do to shepherd that through Congress, to get that across the finish line as quickly as he could. And what we've seen is that even though it's, you know, only in its infancy, the temporary relief measures that were put into place in that rescue plan are really having an impact on our economy and on households that have been impacted and are struggling as a result of the pandemic. But not resting on his laurels, the president is charging forward to, you know, say, what's next? All right, we addressed rescue. Now, how do we look at recovery? What do we need to do next? And he's talking about that package really sort of in two different buckets. He has an infrastructure package that we saw come out at the very beginning of April. And then he has a families plan that we're expecting to see next week when he addresses the joint session of Congress. And those two taken together are really, what we think is a historic plan to put our country back on track to help us get out from all the hardship and disruption that's been caused as a result of this pandemic, but also to build a stronger, more equitable economy, one where everyone has health coverage and can get the care that they need, and where we support working people and people who face disadvantages. So I really think that this is an ambitious plan that he's laying out and one that could really be transformative for our economy.
Can you help us understand how it would be transformative? Like, what are the big pieces in this package? Like, are you seeing so far like a Biden economic, I don't know if the doctrine, like a thesis of how to rescue the economy? Like, how would you categorize it?
Sure. So I think what we saw released already in the jobs plan that sort of, you know, first part of the recovery package, you know, that really talks about addressing our infrastructure. And by that, it's not just roads and bridges, although we know that we have crumbling roads and bridges that need to be rebuilt, and also our public transit systems that are in need of help. But more than that, it's our the physical buildings for our schools, the housing as infrastructure. How do we build, the backbone of our economy in a way that's sustainable and helps address the climate change crisis that our country and this world are facing. So there's that piece, which we've already seen. And then there's this next piece that we're expecting to see next week. And I think that we'll see it do a couple of things. I think really at the center of this package is going to be children. You know, how do we take steps to make sure that our children are getting what they need to thrive in our economy? How can we work to cut child poverty significantly? And how can we help families as they try to struggle to pay the rent, you know, get the health coverage that they need, put food on the table, and you know, also have the time and space that they need to take care of their responsibilities. So I think that it's really going to be a children-centered, family-centered, you know, worker-centered package that we see this next time around, which really is, you know, the key element of our economy.
That is such a big piece of understanding, like, how people are going to get back to, or not just understanding, but thinking about, like, how the economy is really going to get back on track and how people are getting back to work, because the curtain is open. Like, to those who are working virtually, you can see it. Like, you can see the family. And I think that's really, that's impacting policy, that suddenly we can't separate our family and our work. And I don't think we want to as much as we did once we actually really go back into an office.
Right. I mean, Emily, you're a mom. I'm a mom. We all know what this year has been a real struggle. And my children are fortunate in that we haven't, well, it's been a struggle to help them with school, to make sure that they're getting what they need. You know, I haven't had to also struggle to put food on the table like so many other families, or I haven't had to worry about, like, is my job going to be here tomorrow? But I think that this entire experience has really given us the opportunity to reevaluate. I mean, this in its at its most basic level was a healthcare crisis, yet so many people don't have health coverage. You know, we need to close that gap. We need to make sure that healthcare is affordable and accessible, like, you know, full stop. There is no excuse in a country as wealthy as ours that we don't have permanent healthcare coverage, you know, available to all. We need to close that gap. So there's that piece. But then there's also just, you know, understanding that what workers need, you know, how we can make sure that our economy balances the needs of families and of work environments, how we can make sure that kids are getting what they need in terms of education. You know, how do we open up the economy? And then I think also just one thing that's really been highlighted as a result of the economy is that so many of the problems that we're seeing are a result of the systemic racism that our nation has faced for years. And low-wage workers and workers of color have been particularly hard hit by this pandemic. And so how do we, as we're taking this moment to rebuild the economy, how do we do it in a way that is more equitable for all and really helps course correct some of the injustices of the past?
You know, on that point, you had mentioned before cutting child poverty. The child tax credit that was in the COVID relief bill is said to really be historic in terms of the potential to cut child poverty in half. It's a one-year child tax credit. Given how popular I think we expect it to be, I've been a little bit surprised that we haven't seen it in the legislation that the Biden administration has proposed so far. Do you think they're kind of taking a gamble that it's going to be so popular they'll be able to pass it on its own later on?
So I think that we're going to see a real effort in this next package to make the child tax credit permanent, to make the earned income tax credit permanent. These are the most effective tools that we have to cut poverty, to cut child poverty. And I certainly don't envision a world in which the president and this administration has decided that they only want to cut poverty for a year, right? Like, this has to be a long-term plan. This has to have systems in place that are going to make sure that we can continue to build on the success of this this rescue plan that was passed earlier. So I think that we're going to see efforts to really do this in a more permanent way.
So speaking of building on success, what is considered, like, quote, infrastructure in the president's plan is, like, kind of the core of this debate? Like, is it just roads and bridges, which is the Republican perspective? Or is it more things like cutting child poverty, like care economy, like that's rebuilding schools? That's been more the Democratic perspective. And so the strategy, this is why you are the perfect person for us to be having this conversation with, because the strategy of how the bill is going to pass or how they want it to pass, That's why that kind of matters, right? Depends on how many votes Congress actually needs to pass it. So can you help us understand why the strategy is important to how you define an infrastructure package?
Sure. So I think that the infrastructure that we're talking about has both hard and soft components, right? There's the roads and bridges, the airports and transit systems. All of those are important. Also in that hard system are like water systems, right? We need to make sure that people have clean water. We need to make sure that public housing is safe. We need to make sure that our school buildings are built for the 21st century and can provide what our kids need. So there's a lot of really important hard infrastructure pieces that are beyond traditional roads and bridges. So any sort of attempt to just make this about roads and bridges really misses a huge part of the economy that's critical to our meeting our infrastructure needs. But then there's also just the soft parts of our infrastructure, right? Like what are those work systems? What are the supports that are in place to make sure that people can put food on the table, can pay their rent, can pay their bills, can get where they need to go? And how do we make sure that people have the systems in place? You know, do we have childcare? Do we have paid leave? Like, are there those other types of services that are you know, that are essential to really creating the broader infrastructure of our economy. And I think as you ask about the strategy, I think that there's a couple of questions here. I think, you know, sort of, I think the administration sees this as a full sort of recovery package that includes both the hard and the soft parts. Whether or not this moves on Capitol Hill in two separate bills or one like big package, you know, I don't really care as long as I get it done. So, you know, so I think like that's kind of something where Speaker Pelosi and Leader Schumer need to.
Yeah, you give her that gavel. You don't try to take away that gavel from her again.
Right. You know, like you give them the space to figure out what they need to do to get this across the finish line, whether they need to do that in two packages or one. I don't think that's the conversation that we need to have. I think the conversation we need to have is what do we need to get done at the end of the day? You know, and as long as it's sort of like all of those, you know, broader systemic pieces, I think that's really the right question to be asking.
I mean, honestly, I feel like that's the Biden tactic, is like to go out, talk about the pieces that are in it. Infrastructure itself does poll extremely high. I mean, it's, you know, about 65% with the American public, about 70% of independents, even 30% of Republicans. Like what's in Biden's infrastructure package, like the package itself is very popular, and Republicans on Capitol Hill are less willing to get on board. They say both because of what's defined in the infrastructure package, even though Biden is attempting to make it a bipartisan bill, and because of how to pay for it. So can you talk to us about how that's playing into it right now?
Yeah, you know, I think it's super interesting when you talk about the popularity of this package. You're right, the infrastructure package polls incredibly well. People want these types of investments. People can look around and know that there are too many, you know, falling down buildings or crumbling infrastructure or things that just need investment for our economy to grow. What's really interesting is that when you ask people about the package, it polls well. When you ask them about the package and say that the way that we're going to pay for this primarily is to reevaluate and right size our tax code so that wealthier individuals are paying more of their fair share, as well as corporations, then the polling for the plan goes up even greater. So, you know, our nation is a very wealthy nation, and we can afford to make these types of critical investments. You know, we need these types of essential elements to have a strong, thriving economy. And so asking those who can afford to pay more of their fair share, you know, making sure that households with incomes that are, you know, at the top of the income levels, that they're contributing more fairly to the economy, like that absolutely feels like the right place to go. We know that in past years under the Trump tax cuts, the tax system was really put on a different trajectory, where those at the top were actually given massive tax cuts, as well as, you know, corporations saw the same. And, you know, when we talk about the types of services that our country needs, you know, we need to be looking to generate ways to pay for them, and asking those who can't afford to pay their fair share is absolutely the right approach.
The corporate tax piece has actually been the most interesting, I think, for me, tactic on the Republican side. That, like, they're really digging in, thinking that low corporate taxes are incredibly popular and that people wouldn't be willing to make concessions in terms of investment to keep them low. You know, the proposal is that it would go from 21% where it is now to 28%. It sounds like the objection of Republicans is, and also trying to get some of the money from multinational corporations that they make offshore to pay taxes in the U.S. But what I think is so so interesting is that I think it, what it basically comes down to is that the Trump tax cuts were the biggest thing that Republicans were able to get done under the Trump presidency. And so reversing any piece of it, I think probably just feels like a political loss to them, as opposed to like making a bet that it's going to be unpopular to raise corporate taxes from 21% to 28%. Like, I feel like there's even populist wings of the Republican Party that would be for that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think that, that the whole dynamic is really interesting. One thing that I keep hearing them say is like, oh, if you raise the corporate tax rate, then we're going to have all these companies move overseas. But the evidence doesn't bear that out. I mean, you know, the American workforce is a highly educated workforce. And there's a lot of, you know, critical reasons for companies to stay here. People don't just, you know, pack up their bags and head overseas easily. And the idea that this, you know, shift in tax rate is going to force that kind of exodus. I don't think that we see evidence to that. So you know, I don't know. I think that this is something that we'll have to wait and see play out. But it is interesting to me to see how well all of the proposed changes that we've seen in the Biden tax plan so far do pull quite favorably.
Very favorably. So Tamara, one question left. What do you hope to see in the next 100 days from the Biden administration?
So I think that in the next 100 days, you know, the Biden administration is going to make a massive effort to really try and sell the American recovery plan, both the hard infrastructure and the soft infrastructure parts of it, to the American public and to the Congress. I think that the Rescue Act was able to be passed very quickly because of the urgency of the situation. I think this next piece is going to be a little bit longer. And I think that, you know, we're going to have a little bit more patience as we as Congress and the administration try and work it out and get it across the finish line. But I expect that we'll see more details. You know, I expect that we'll know more about what they want to do to provide universal pre-K or to make sure that everybody can attend community college if they want or have access to childcare. I mean, I think that we're going to see a lot more of the details of their plan as they move forward. And one thing that I do expect that we saw with the rescue plan that I think the president will do again is, you know, Republicans in Congress have not necessarily indicated a willingness to go along with the president's agenda. But there has been widespread bipartisan approval of what the president is doing. And I think that the president will smartly be saying, okay, you know, like if I'm not making inroads in Congress, I'm going to take this straight to the people, straight to the Republican governors, straight to Republican legislators, because, you know, we do see more more willingness to have those conversations once you get outside of Washington. And I think that that's really important because, you know, the partisanship and the dysfunction that we see in D.C., you know, we need to sort of make the effort to try and break away from that, and certainly doing it by talking outside of the Beltway is a really important first step.
Getting outside the Beltway always feels more effective. Is there anything in terms of executive actions that the administration can do unilaterally that you're hoping to see on an economic front in the next 100 days?
So there's just a whole lot that they've started that I think is really important, right? You know, they've announced that they're going to move forward with a number of key things that will make it easier for people to pay rent or put food on the table. Some of that is reevaluating, you know, food assistance benefits. We expect that to continue. You know, they're making progress towards addressing fair housing laws and rolling back some Trump policies there. I think that they're going to, you know, continue on a number of these fronts. I also think the important work that the administration is going to play over the next couple of months is making sure that the rescue plan money, the money that did pass Congress, gets into the hands of people, gets targeted in the way that it's supposed to, make sure that states know how to use it, and make sure that, like, that it's going to be used in the most effective way possible. And I think that that implementation work is going to be enormously important to be able to realize the benefits of the rescue plan that was just enacted.
For sure. I was talking to one of the agencies the other day, and they said they're about to roll out like a really beneficial benefit for people that'll actually help with their monthly budgets, like their, you know, like kitchen table budgets. But Congress didn't allocate them any media budget to be able to publicize it. So they're actually not sure people are going to find out about it. So yes, so much hard work to do. Tamara Fusil, so good to have you on to talk about Biden's first 100 days, around first 100 days. You are both a legislative mentor to me and a mom in politics mentor to me. So thank you so much for coming on. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thanks, Emily. It's great to be here.
See you soon.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Your Political Playlist. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Your Political Playlist, where you can see video of my interview with Tamara and join us live to ask questions during future ones. For more from Tamara, you can follow her on Twitter at Tamara Fusil. Join us every week for smart but bite-sized conversations with women at the seat of power and activism. Subscribe if you like us, leave us a rating, and comment to let others know. Talk to you next time.